Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This podcast may contain adult themes, strong language, and stupid health advice. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to In Bad Taste, where we cast a critical eye over health documentaries and the claims they make. I am your host, registered nutritionist Pixie Turner. Can you tell that I'm bored of talking about sugar? No? Okay, let's carry on then.
And I'm back again, cardiothoracic surgeon Dr. Nikki Stamp. It is our second episode where we look at the high on flash, low on facts film, that sugar film. But look, you know, as I've already said, it's not super bad because it hasn't claimed to cure cancer, because the bar has been set very low by previous films.
So low. So low. Oh, last week we looked at a broad overview of sugar and some of the claims that Damon, an actor and our protagonist in this documentary, made about sugar, which has taken a very fluffy, visually appealing approach to nutrition and health science. But this week, we need to discuss whether sugar is responsible for all of the evil things in the world. Basically, is sugar the One Ring? I've been rewatching Lord of the Rings recently. I can't help it. Everything is Lord of the Rings.
Will you be upset with me if I tell you something, a secret? You're going to be upset with me when I tell you the secret.
No.
I have never seen Lord of the
probably.
Rings. Never.
No.
Sorry.
Why? Why?
Because I just don't like fantasy films. Which is why I'm watching these. Same genre.
Yeah, there's probably actually more fantasy here than in The Lord of the Rings. Anyway, I could go on a whole other tangent about how Lord of the Rings is so much more than fantasy, and it's probably one of the greatest things of all time, with the greatest movie soundtrack in history.
But hey, listeners, send help. She's very mad at me.
Yes, I am.
She's going to kill me.
Yes.
That's unless sugar kills me first, apparently.
Yay.
Anyway, disclaimer, as usual, we're not telling people to go out and eat a whole bunch of, you know, a whole bag of table sugar because we're not silly, but we also don't like the fear-mongering and blame that happens in this film. So we want to take that out of the conversation and give you information with which you can use to make an informed choice about what you do with your body.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We are only here to judge bad science. We're not here to judge food choices. We're here to help you make up your own mind. So, speaking of bad science, let's get back to the film. What claims do they make about sugar?
All of them. I think one of the things that they really hang their hat on is that Damon tries to eat 40 teaspoons of sugar a day, which is actually 167 grams of sugar, well in excess of the average sugar consumption in Australia and in the UK, we now know. And it's the main thing that they kind of use to show us how much it's damaging him is weight gain. Because he starts doing that. He does something and then he's like, see, and then I've got the jiggle test where he jiggles his belly. I'm like, no. There's a lot wrong with that. But he's basically pinning weight gain on sugar because sugar is bad, allegedly.
you know, but thermodynamically speaking, weight gain or loss is about calories consumed versus calories expended at a very, very basic level. But what gets you to that point is very complex. How you process food, what food you have access to, your psychological state, do you sleep, do you exercise, how much money do you make,
where do you sleep,
all this kind of stuff, all of the things, right? So, you know, so I don't, you can't say one food group leads to weight gain. Because if you consume any macronutrient in excess for the vast multitude of reasons, then yes, you possibly will gain some weight. But is sugar particularly good at causing weight gain? No, it's not.
No, it's not unique in that sense at all. And it's the usual narrative. And once again, we have a whole bunch of stigmatizing and unhelpful images.
Like the jiggle test.
Larger bodies. Yeah, and just of people in larger bodies walking around buying fruit juice because...
Not fruit juice. Horror,
people are buying fruit juice. How dare they? It's the usual boring narrative that is stigmatizing, unhelpful, and not really entirely accurate because there's nothing special about sugar that leads to weight gain.
No.
It just isn't.
No. I guess the only thing that people have tied like foods, say particularly sugary foods and drinks, is that they might lead to less satiety or less feelings of fullness because, say, fat, for example, delays gastric emptying, so your tummy emptying, so you feel fuller for longer. Protein's the same. So that might mean that in order to feel full, you eat more of that and therefore your calorie intake goes up. But that's not special. That's not sugar being especially evil or dangerous. It's not magically poisonous. It's just that, you know, you might decide to eat more of it. But if you eat more of any nutrient, as we've said, you're going to potentially gain weight depending on all these other factors. But yeah, usual stigmatizing kind of stuff that we're not really here for.
Yes. And next up, we have the claim that sugar causes fatty liver.
Ooh.
And this is specifically in relation to non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And this is where they really blame fructose big time.
And I didn't like this at all because, like, don't get me wrong, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease is a really significant problem. Like, it is becoming a big health problem. We're seeing it a lot more, and the consequences can include, you know, even going as far as to having liver failure and needing a liver transplant. So I think it is appropriate to be concerned about it. Now, we talked about this last week. Glucose and fructose are handled differently in the liver, and that's true. They basically say, and we talked about this last week and mentioned that it's not quite true, that fructose can be metabolized by the liver to create fat, but the quantity of fats reduced is actually incredibly small. Like, you know, we said this last week. So ultimately, how much liver fat you accumulate is driven by overall energy intake rather than a specific macronutrient, carbohydrate, protein, fat. And saturated fat is actually very effective, more effective than sugar and fructose at causing liver fat deposition. So don't get me wrong, like, I think from the research I've read, and, you know, Pixie, you'll probably be able to, you know, fill me in more than I can. But, you know, fructose is being looked at because, the fact that it is going down a different metabolic pathway is interesting, right? What, you know, curious scientists want to know, okay, if it's going down a different pathway to glucose, let's find out about that. Let's learn more. But the assumption that fructose is particularly good just isn't really being, you know, held up by the science. Does fructose perhaps change metabolism in other ways that can cause weight gain? Or look, we don't know, is my reading of the literature.
Yeah, and the problem also is if you search this on YouTube, you will come across a very, very popular lecture by Dr. Robert Lustig.
Oh, yes.
And this video has millions and millions of views on YouTube, which is unusual for a lecture. Mm. And he talks through all kinds of various pathways that fructose leads to that causes all sorts of problems. And it looks really compelling. It really does. Mm, mm. And it sounds very, very like a lot. There's a lot of biochemistry. It sounds very sensible. Mm. But actually, a lot of it is assumption and conjecture and actually isn't based on what we legit know happens in the body.
Yeah.
And a lot of the effects that are described are there in the presence of excess energy.
Yes. Yes.
Not otherwise.
Yes.
So this is not like a universal thing. It depends on specific conditions. And yeah, I mean, it seems likely that fructose can play a role if there's an absolute humongous amount. Mm-hmm. But in the context of excess energy, and even then, it's not the only thing. It's not universal. It's not guaranteed. It's not quite that simple because, as you say, saturated fat also does play a role. And this isn't about cutting out fructose, cutting out sugar. It's about just, you know, the general advice that we all are already familiar with about, you know, having a little bit of sweet stuff if you enjoy it, but, you know, maybe not like a kilo of it every day.
Do you know the other thing that I think is problematic about this discussion with fructose is that fructose is the main sugar found in fruit. And I know that popular low sugar diets or advice advocates cutting out a lot of fruit.
Mm.
And that's not helpful advice for the vast majority of the population. The only time I can think about people needing to be mindful of how much fruit they eat would be diabetics, because that could jack up their blood sugar. But that's, you know, that's not advice for the general population. And by the way, diabetic people still eat fruit. It's still recommended as part of their, you know, their diet. It's just about, you know, some of them will have to be more mindful. But, you know, when you start saying fruit is bad for you, you know, you've got to start thinking there's something wrong with that advice that you're being given.
Yeah. And the way I see it, the kind of the anti-sugar camp tend to be divided into two categories. Mm-hmm. Either they are the kind of remove as much fruit as possible mm-hmm. camp because it's too much sugar, or they go along the lines of fructose is a poison, but fiber is the antidote that nature has given us, and fructose is only natural and therefore acceptable when it's in whole fruit, otherwise it's a poison, that's not how poisons actually work. Secondly, you've gone for a whole kind of natural fallacy going on there as well. And thirdly, like, honey is a thing that humans have been eating for mm-hmm. a very long time. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Sure. Whatever helps you sleep, you crazy people.
Well, speaking of crazy, we mentioned this last episode. Damon does.
Oh!
You know where I'm going.
Was that an accidental segue?
It was a segue. But Damon has a lot of shots of him dancing in his undies and being generally just a little eccentric. And his wife says that he's normally like this to a psychologist, but then is very quick to say that it's different now. The implication being that because he's having all of this sugar, he's getting hyperactive, and kids do the same, and sugar makes you hyper and behave a little mental. I'm like, no, I don't think there's been a biologically causal link shown from sugar consumption to dancing in the desert in your undies. To the best of my knowledge.
No, it's actually, no, you're more likely to get that effect if you're on drugs, to be honest. Obviously, sugar is not a drug. Yeah, we saw way too much of this guy's naked upper body, and it's not, I mean, it doesn't do anything for me. I'm just not interested in seeing that. It just, no, so just, no.
There's the yellow Y fronts that kind of annoyed me.
Oh no. Ew, it's such a no. It's not a good image. It's not a good image. By the way, that ew is not body shaming because it's directed at the Y fronts, okay?
Oh yeah, yeah,
it's not body shaming.
No.
Don't come at us for that because it's not what we're doing. It's just no, I have an issue with not this person's body. I just don't like seeing naked men. It's just not written, doesn't really do anything to me. So, you know. It's nothing personal about this guy.
I take exception with the undies. That's my problem.
I'm sorry, Damon. Again, it's nothing about seeing you like half naked. I could care less. I grew up swimming and doing surf lifesaving. I stand around people in their Speedos all the time. That's not my problem. I'm just not a fan of the yellow undies.
Oof, yeah. No. Undies should never be yellow, let's be honest. But yes, you are absolutely right that this whole hyperactivity thing is just, no, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
It is.
Parents think that sugar's going to make their kids hyperactive, so they say to them, like, calm down, don't eat too much sugar, it's going to make you hyper. And then guess what? The kids are like, energy, let's go!
Yeah.
And then they're super hyper because they've eaten food and because you've told them that they're going to be hyper, and especially if they're around other kids. It just happens and happens, and it's not specifically sugar-related.
No.
Firstly, they're just kids. Secondly, there's more than one of them. And thirdly, you're telling them that this is going to happen. It's going to happen at that point, for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's not just hyperactivity. It's also, we talk about mood disorders because someone here talks about the idea that sugar produces these highs and lows that is very much
that was
like
the nutritionist. That was the nutritionist saying that.
That was probably
the one thing that I thought was, you know, bordering on we can cure cancer. Because she was basically claiming that diet can cure depression and anxiety. And I was like, I think that's a dangerous hill to die on.
It is absolutely so, so dangerous. Sugar does not cause anxiety, okay? Mm-hmm. And cutting out sugar also does not cure anxiety, because anxiety is not that simple. That's not how it works. A sugar high and low is not the same as bipolar. It's not the same as anxiety. I mean, this guy, he describes a sugar high and then says that on the come down, he feels vague and aloof. Vague is not an emotion.
I feel like, okay, this is being very cynical. I'm being cynical here. He's an actor. He's acting for the film. Like, I'm not calling him a liar. I'm just saying he's kind of an extroverted, outgoing, gregarious kind of personality, it seems. And that's what we're getting. Like, he's like, everything is the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. You know, I'm not calling him a liar. I'm just being a little bit cynical. I mean, I know that when it comes to mood disorders, there is some stuff that says there might be a link with some mood disorders, but honestly, it's such small potatoes compared to the actual known well-established risk factors for depression and anxiety and other mood disorders, like genetics, like situational things, like medical problems, all those sorts of things, that to then pin it on sugar, I think it allows us to ignore the other points in someone's life or at a societal level that need fixing in order to better support people with mood disorders.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it also provides a beautiful narrative of blame, which
we've
seen so much of. It's like, have depression because you eat sugar. Fuck off. Absolutely fucking not.
Excuse me.
And, you know, just to really hammer the last nail into the coffin here, like, their equivalent of checkmate is shitting all over the board by introducing David motherfucking Wolf.
Mm.
What an asshole.
Yep.
Of all the people they could ask to be expert, they bring in this fucker who is just a total insane...
He's a conspiracy theorist.
Conspiracy theorist, exactly. Tinfoil hat to the absolute extreme. Chocolate is the masculine energy from the center of the sun. Oh, fuck the fuck off and stop smoking whatever weird shit you're smoking. He has absolutely no fucking clue about anything, and yet they bring him out here as a fucking expert. Oh man, this was probably the one moment in the movie where I was like, I'm so angry right now.
He's an anti-vaxxer and his nickname is Avocado. Like...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
No. And this is what we said. This is what we said last episode. These people get trotted out and we like the aesthetic of putting them on like juice containers or whatever. Really cute. But they don't tell them, they don't tell us, the audience, who they are and what their qualifications are and why we're speaking to them. So, you know, yeah, this guy has absolutely zero credibility. He 100% should not be in this film.
He's a raw food expert. What the fuck does that have to do with anything here?
Yeah, I go shopping and grocery shopping and buy vegetables. Does that make me a raw food expert? I know how to tell the difference between a carrot that's good and one that's gone off.
Probably, yeah. Probably.
Okay, let's make a film.
That was said with the exact same tone of "let's make a baby," by the way, and I am here for it.
Oh. I've still got yellow undies in my head. I'm not really feeling it. Sorry.
Oh.
We also have to blame sugar for pimples, which was such a common thing growing up. Like, whose parents didn't say to them, don't eat all that sugar or you'll get pimples?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I happen to be very good friends with a consultant dermatologist called Dr. Anjali Marto, who
we
is
love
just
her.
An excellent human being. Yes. And amazing. And we've had many conversations about this, so I'm very much just going to repeat what she says because she is the absolute expert here. Mm-hmm. And that is that acne is largely down to genetics and hormones, not sugar.
How boring.
In fact, for the vast majority of the population, changing the way you're eating, cutting out foods like sugar, cutting out dairy, for example, for the vast majority of people, it does absolutely nothing in terms of changing your skin or improving your skin.
Mm.
But stressing about what you're eating, that's going to produce some stress hormones, which is going to potentially have an impact on your skin. So rather than listening to these guys and cutting out sugar, why not go and see a consultant dermatologist instead who actually knows what they're talking about?
I have a question. Maybe this is something we'll have to ask Anjali. If people, because acne, right, particularly severe acne, can be very, very traumatic thing to have. You know, it can lead to permanent scarring and have psychological side effects, social side effects, all those sorts of things. I do wonder if people sort of stuff around with diets and other kind of unproven remedies, which also, again, as we've already said once before, puts a lot of blame onto them for their condition. That in the time that they're doing that, they could have seen a dermatologist or their general practitioner or someone, gotten an appropriate treatment plan and reduced the risk of all these side effects. It's just delaying treatment, isn't it? Delaying successful, effective treatment.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes cutting out sugars feels easier than going to therapy.
Ugh, therapy. Anyway.
Just like that silence, we're both like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I know.
Yep. Okay. Moving on. The final, I guess, claim that they make here about sugar and conditions is dental health.
Oh,
and you know what?
This was epic.
Yeah. It was epic. Because, yes, there is a very strong link between sugar consumption and dental health. This is the one thing that absolutely totally, yes, is a thing. Mm. So excess sugar drastically increases your risk of tooth decay, cavities, and tooth loss. So there is a report published by UCL, University College London, in 2014 that is probably the most widely accepted article connecting sugar intake amounts and dental health. We will link it in the show notes so you can have a look. There is a clear link.
Yeah.
And to demonstrate this, we get to watch a 17-year-old in the US attempt to have some teeth taken out after he's drunk 12 cans of Mountain Dew per day for the last couple of years, and it was awful to watch.
Oh, it was awful to watch. But you know, when I was a registrar, I was on a weekend, like when weekends on call, we'd have to do like a list at the children's hospital, and there was always a dental list ongoing because, you know, dentistry is like, you know, basically they're always, they need more time, so they would do like a dental operating list on a weekend, and there was almost always kids like less than 10 having full dental clearances. That means taking all of their teeth out, and that's what this guy in the film was going to do. And yeah, a lot of it comes down to sugar consumption. So this is where I think I had two public health questions about this particular scenario in the film. One, they've got one guy, one sole dentist, driving around in a van he has made himself, and I'm getting the impression he is giving away this treatment for free. Did you get that impression? He's giving away this treatment for free because I'm sure, like, medical care in the US, dentistry is expensive. I mean, dentistry is expensive here. You know, it is what it is. But I was like, hang on a second. If you've got people whose teeth are so rotten, they are literally falling out of their head, where is the public health? Where is the public health supplied dentistry? So that really annoyed me. But the second thing is that with that link between sugar and dental health being so strong, what in the hell is the governance of that particular area, the state, whatever, how are they tackling this? What are they doing? You're going to have a 17-year-old with a full set of dentures. I mean,
yeah. Well, dentures that we don't actually end up seeing, because apparently this kid's gums were so infected that no amount of anesthetic, no amount of local anesthetic was working. So he was in incredible pain, and they eventually had to stop. And it was not fun to watch.
Can I explain the science behind that? I think it's really cool.
Oh my God, yes. I'm so interested by this, please.
Okay. Cool. So when you have an infection, the tissue becomes very acidic, and because of the, you know, substances that are produced by the white blood cells trying to fight off infection. And they become very hyperemic, which means they're getting a lot of blood flow, which means that the local anesthetic, which is also quite acidic, it doesn't find itself in the correct pH environment to work, number one. And the hyperemia, the excess blood flow, washes it out too quickly.
That makes so much sense.
Cool,
I had absolutely no idea.
But so let's just put that in context for this kid who his teeth are, I mean, they're rotten, they're brown stubs, okay? What does that mean for him? In order to get his teeth out, he may be looking at a general anesthetic to have his teeth out, all of them, at 17.
Oof, yeah. I mean, I've had general anesthetic to take out my wisdom teeth.
Oh, same.
Oh, it was great.
I did not have a good time. I don't wake up very well from anesthetics. So, yeah, I kind of annoyed the nurses. I'm very sorry.
I was apparently just hilarious. So
that's amazing. Look, yeah, no. that's my summation of the science or lack of science.
I mean, okay, when it comes to dental health, yes, definitely a link between dental health and sugar. When it comes to fatty liver, kind of, but not perhaps as obvious as it's made out in the movie, and not perhaps as clear-cut as they try and frame it. When it comes to weight gain, hyperactivity, mood disorders, and acne, no. It's not a thing.
No.
And of course, you know, we have the final thing of, is sugar addictive?
Oh.
You know what? We've covered this so many times that what I'm just going to say is, No.
No, it's really not. It's just not that simple. Like, I wish I would stop saying that. I think it really diminishes real addiction.
It does. And look, we have covered this many times. If you're really keen to find out more, listen to other episodes that we've done on other sugar documentaries. I believe we covered the whole is sugar addictive in Fed Up. So if you have a look at those episodes, you might even find an entire episode called Is Sugar Addictive? Or something like that. You'll probably find something like that. So go have a listen to that, because it's really thorough. And quite frankly, at this point, we are bored of this narrative. We don't want this episode to be twice as long as it already is. And so all I'm going to say is, and no, it is not.
No, no, no.
And on that note, we're out.
Yep.
For this week.
I'm leaving.
Yeah, we're taking our bat and our ball. We're going home. But in the meantime, please don't forget to leave us a 5-star rating, because that's how people will find us. Subscribe. I don't know why I can never say subscribe easily. It never rolls off the tongue for me. What's wrong with me? Don't answer
that. It's not you, it's the word.
Okay, sure. Okay. If you have questions or comments, though, get in contact with us on email, inbadtastepodcast@gmail.com. And as always, you can come and see us on our socials. Pixie is at Pixie Nutrition and I am at Dr. Nikki Stamp. And as always, we will leave you some juicy references and relevant links in the show notes, which are below. Down there.
Yep, just scroll down a bit. You'll find it.
Hello.
So next week, we are going to be taking a broader look beyond the health claims to the kind of general claim, like, is sugar really an absolutely everything? What the hell is this bliss point situation? And do companies really take out fat only to replace it with sugar in their products?
No.
Let's have a look at the food industry and the whole thing of what's going on there. We will see you next week for all of that jazz. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.